Tonight I want to look at the ninth plague, Makat Choshech, the plague of darkness. And it's a fascinating plague, and let's get right into it. Look at some of the verses, and particularly I want to start off with the comment of Rashi. Now, I want to divide this class into really two or three parts, because I want to look at this plague from a variety of different angles, and put together what is some extraordinarily important themes that Makat Choshech actually represents. So, please turn, if you would, to page 344. Yes, absolutely. It's chapter Perek Yud, Pasuk Kaf Aleph, chapter 10, Pasuk 21. So this is the ninth plague. Some of the plagues are not introduced by warning. The plague of locusts is a disastrous plague and affects much of Egypt's wealth. All the residual agricultural economy is destroyed, is utterly destroyed by the plague of darkness, by the plague of locusts. Plague of darkness is one of the plagues that is not introduced by a warning to Pharaoh. It just happens. So look and see what happens. Page 3, top of page, Pasuk Kaf Aleph. Vayomer Hashem o Moshe. God says to Moses, Nete yadcha al hashamayim. Lift up your hand towards heaven. V'choshech al eretz Mitzrayim. And there will be darkness over the land of Egypt. V'yamesh choshech. And darkness will appear. Darkness will, translate that word, v'yamesh. So the English, yeah, meaning?
Something substantive.
There will be there will be not just darkness, the Amesh Choshech, there will be a tangible darkness, a good word.
Yeah.
There will be a thick darkness. I actually heard a shir later on, earlier today, Rabbi Tarragon asked in the name of the Chatam Sofer, why if God wanted to make it dark, why he didn't just make everybody blind? There's a darkness which is more than just an inability to see, as we'll see. So, and notice, by the way, this is a very short plague. I mean, it lasted a few days, three days or six days. There's very few verses about this particular plague. But just hold on, I know it's your special Bar Mitzvah Parsha, but let me just catch up time a little bit. The Amesh, notice whenever the plague of darkness is described, there's a double description. It's doubly described. There will be darkness, says God, via mesh choshech, and the darkness will be thick. Ve'yed Moshe yadol shemayim. Moses indeed lifts up his hand against heaven. V'choshech afela b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. And there was, what kind of darkness was there? What does afela mean?
Dark.
What kind of darkness was it? Give me an adjective to describe the darkness. Dark darkness. There was very dark darkness in the land of Egypt, maybe, b'chol eretz Mitzrayim shloshet yamim, for 3 days. And now we're told the effects of the darkness, and watch this very carefully. Lo ra'u ish et achiv, no man saw his brother, v'lo kamu ish mitachtav shloshet yamim. No man saw his brother, and no man was able to rise up from beneath it for 3 days. So the darkness is, again, it's a double description. You could neither see in this plague of darkness, nor
could you move.
You couldn't move. It was a mobilizing darkness. L'chol b'nei Yisrael, haya'or b'moshevotam, and all the Jewish people had light in their dwelling. And not only light in the dwelling, according to Chazal, according to Rashi, but in fact, they had light wherever they went. We'll see Rashi in a moment. They had light wherever they went. And even in the homes of the Egyptians, when a Jew went into the home of an Egyptian, he would be able to see, even though the Egyptians would not be able to see. Wow. So the Egyptians are plunged into this thick, thick plague of darkness.
Personal
now, let me ask you a very quick question. What plague, if you had to undergo any one of the 10 plagues, this would be a great game to play on Saturday night, which plague would you rather be, Stephen, you're a man of the world, you podcast from all over the world, would you rather be afflicted by boils or by chased by wild, you know, you could play that.
The frogs.
What did it say?
I would do the frogs.
frogs.
So apparently the plague of frogs, which is kind of everybody's humorous, you know, has now become the kind of the comic effect plague on Saturday night. Apparently the plague of frogs was terrifying, and the commentators talk about the noise of the plague of the frogs. Yeah, so even without getting involved in the alligators, even the frog. But I would have thought that the plague of darkness, I mean, it's unpleasant to be in the dark, but I would have thought the plague of the darkness is neither painful nor terrifying. What did you say?
When you die, because it was 6 days, and yeah, you couldn't move, so you couldn't eat or drink.
Yes, it's an interesting, yeah. So it's actually an interesting question about why it was that, you know, what was the effect of this plague? It doesn't say that people died in this plague. And as we know, you can't really last for more than 3 days without being able. And by the way, there is a midrash that says for the first 3 days, you could move around, just not see. For the second 3 days, you could, you were immobilized. So maybe they had just, you know, they had 3 days of starvation,
so
but they were
on the brink of death is what you're saying?
Maybe. I don't know. But look at Rashi. I want to draw your attention to Rashi on this pasuk. We look; it's on the sheets, but I haven't given out the sheets yet. We'll just look at we'll look at the Hebrew. And Rashi says as follows. Just give me a second. One second. Yes, look at Rashi. It's the top line of the second column, the left-hand column in Rashi. And Rashi says as follows: "V'lama hevi aleihem choshech." Now, there are many, many reasons given for the plagues and different theories that explain why the 10 plagues and why the order. And some commentators and some view in the Midrash take the view that the plagues were punishment, mida keneged mida, direct punishment corresponding to what the Egyptians had done. That theory is kind of borne out in the set of verses which already happened at the beginning of the book of Shemot, where God says to Moses, go tell Pharaoh, B'ni b'chori Yisrael. We looked at these verses a few weeks ago. Israel is my firstborn son. If you mistreat them, then what will I do, says God? I am going to kill your firstborn son. So that pegs at least the 10th plague and possibly all of them as punishment, as retribution, mida keneged mida. What did the Egyptians do that deserved to be plunged into immobilizing darkness?
Christ killed the Jews.
What did they do that's directly corresponding to darkness? So some commentators say they probably imprisoned Jews in dungeons and cellars and bricked them up. Living Jews in war, and you know, living Jews were buried alive in building sites, construction sites, etc. So there are various midrashim that take that view, that it's a direct, retribution for plunging the Jews into physical darkness. Another strand, which we'll look at a little bit later on, is maybe it's talking about psychological darkness. You cause the Jewish people to live without hope, to really take away, abandon all the light of the future for them, and therefore hope is stripped away from you. And we'll look at strong evidence of that point of view. Other commentators say, and I'm going with it, just bear with me, I'm not taking questions at the moment because I'm giving an introduction to Rashi. Other commentators take the view, famously the Midrash, and interestingly, Rashi has already quoted this Midrash that says that if you were to besiege an enemy city or town, there's a way of waging war. There's a way of waging war, and you first of all, you attack the water supply, which is the blood. And then you begin psychological, a dark psych ops, so you send in frogs to make not, you know, like one by one you gradually dismantle the ability of this country. And Rashi seems to adopt that as his explanation of what the 10 plagues were. It's like a military campaign being played out against the Egyptians. That makes the following Rashi very interesting, because this is the only time Rashi asks why this specific plague and why now. So look what Rashi says. And there's a famous question. Whenever you learn Rashi, you're always supposed to know what's bothering Rashi. We're going to ask that question in 1 second. So look at Rashi. Lama hivi alehem choshech. Why did God bring darkness to them? That indicates that Rashi feels that this plague is somehow an exception that requires a special explanation. Shahayu b'Yisrael ba'oto hador rishaim v'lo hayu rotzim latzeit. There were wicked Jews in that generation who did not want to leave. We're at the top, now we're on the second line of the left-hand column of Rashi. There were wicked Jews who didn't want to leave. Imagine such a thing. A Jew has an opportunity to leave their country of estrangement, go and live in the land of Israel, and yet decline that. Who would have ever thought of such a thing? Maybe a bit of a mirror. There were Jews who did not want to leave. Umetu b'shloshes yamim afela. And therefore God killed them off in these 3 days of darkness. So that the Egyptians should not see the Jewish loss of life, the Jewish suffering in these days. V'yamru, and the Egyptians would have said, Afhen lokim kamono, it's not just the Jews, that it's not just the Egyptians that God is angry with. He's angry with the Jews as well. Fascinating midrash. God brings a plague of darkness in order to kill off the Jews who had no intention of leaving and were not going to be allowed to remain in Egypt just to assimilate. They had to be killed off. Those are those 3 days. Va'od, Rashi doesn't relate to that point. Va'od, and another explanation, says Rashi, Shechivsu Yisrael v'ra'u et kleham. These 3 days were an opportunity for the Jews to go into the home of the Egyptians and check out their stuff, look at their stuff. And when the Jewish people were ready to leave Egypt and our Parsha, and they were told to ask their neighbors for clay kesef, clay zahab, silver and gold, the Egyptian would say, I'd love to give you some silver and gold, but I'm all out. All out, just made a wedding, I don't have any silver and gold left, I gave it all away as a present. And the Jew would be able to say, Omer lo, the Jew could say, what are you talking about? Ani re'ita b'baitecha, when you were sitting in darkness, I was going through your stuff. I know exactly where it is, v'mokom ploni hu, and it is exactly in this specific drawer, in this specific closet in your house. Give it to me. So whether you take the inclination that the plague was so the Jews could die under the cover of darkness, or so that the Jews could rummage through the Egyptians' homes under cover of darkness, Rashi is making an observation about this plague. What's bothering Rashi? What's bothering Rashi? What makes Rashi, Bernard?
Why darkness of all things?
Go elaborate, expand on that.
Well, as you said earlier, why not blindness or any other debilitating thing like...
So what exactly is bothering Rashi is this, or along the lines of what Bernard is saying, which is that the plague of darkness on, you know, it might be a little unpleasant, but on the scale of things, especially at the level of destruction that has been meted out to the Egyptians by now, this seems to be an anticlimax, or indeed not that much of a big deal at all. Okay, so it's dark for a few days. Okay, it might be unpleasant, but on the scale of things, this would seem to be minor league, barely involves any suffering at all. Emmanuel, is that your brother, by the way?
Yes.
How could I tell? Yes, we'll get to that. So we're going to get to the theme. We're going to answer the question, why plague of darkness, in a different way. And we're absolutely going to come light on exactly that point about maybe a greater theological reason. I'm in fact going to suggest a theme of darkness that lies all the way through the Parsha, and we'll hold off that idea for a moment. I just want to concentrate for a moment on Rashi. Yes, Sherry?
First.
You only get one.
I thought you...
No, a lot of people. Go on.
No, but it's 3 days or 6 days is this darkness?
It's not clear. So now
but here's the point. That makes me very uncomfortable.
Okay.
In terms of what it says about us.
Fine.
You know, we're going sneaking into their house to find out what they have in goods.
Yeah. We weren't that happy. Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Okay, a lot of comments, and I want to go with the program. Yes, Sandy.
I'm thinking that darkness, like in all the other plagues, they could dig wells, they could maybe try to get the livestock in the barns, etc. Mm. If you're immobilized, here you're immobilized, and you also are disoriented. You can't see.
Yes, so there
you
is.
Act. So it's another level after all of that.
Correct. And you can argue the point, and we'll see other commentators really do argue the point. Rashi seems to say darkness seems to be, at least on the scale of the escalating plagues, a little bit underwhelming. That's how you go, darkness. So there must be another interpretation. According to Rashi, the ninth plague It's not really a plague at all. It's a way of advancing the Exodus narrative. Some things have to happen so that the Jewish people can leave Egypt. Either the wicked ones can die quietly, or the good ones can go through the Egyptian stuff. But the plague is not so much about reducing the Egyptians to submission, but letting, you know, helping getting ready for Yetziat Mitzrayim. I'm just going to take one more comment from Stephen, who asked, really had his hand up first, and then we're going to go on, because there's lots to cover.
Remember at Drisha Shir a few years ago, in which we analyzed the plague corresponding to the creation narrative in Bereishis.
Right.
So that the plagues are a reversal, one by one, of God creating the world. So it ends with man dying, Choshech is by Yehi Or, and then it just parallels all the way back.
But what was the first thing that Hashem said? So then that would be the 10th plague, not the 9th plague. I mean, I'm familiar with that approach. I'm just saying that you have to kind of, unless Chazal say the word, Chazal say Bereshit is a word of utterance as well. You have to make it fit a little bit, but I'm familiar with that approach as well. Ian, only because you brought the pizza.
It was less about punishment and more about preparing for the Exodus, because Hashem knew what was coming next. However, it's interesting that it doesn't say while they were looking through the Egyptian things that they didn't go and take a lamb for the, you know, for the.
Oh, well, that you had to buy. The Chatam Sofer asks a more interesting question, which is, why didn't they just leave?
Yeah.
Isn't that a great question? I never thought of that question. Why didn't they just get up and leave? So the answer is because, and I think we kind of intuit, because Jewish peoplehood, and we'll get exactly to this point in a second, Jewish peoplehood is not achieved by sneaking away under the cover of darkness. It's achieved actually by going out into liberty, kind of proudly, whatever. Emmanuel, because you brought the whiskey. You have to speak louder. They're all... Shh. Oh, I need it.
Oh, terrible.
Right. That's a question. You mean that the plagues afflicted them or not?
No, here, like the fact that the kosher is so dense and physically present.
Right.
And the Jews can go through it and can see, you know, it shows that there is two,
right.
Reality, two physical, like.
Right. They're actually working in div. It's not merely that the Egyptians are suffering with the blood or the frogs and the Jews aren't. You're saying it's almost as if they're living in a different place, like parallel universes. Fascinating idea. And this actually, I want to go with that idea in a second. Turn in these sheets that I just gave out. Turn to the second page. They're double sided. So I have on the sheets, I'm not going to get into it now. Different theories, some of the more literal pshat-orientated commentaries kind of bothered by the description of darkness. The cheats come around. Did you get all that? A couple of you may have to share. I thought I prepared enough, but if you could just make sure that they go all the way up to the handout sheets. I think make sure they go all the way up to the end of the line. So some of the commentators kind of try and explain on a physical term what it means that darkness is, tangible darkness. The Ibn Ezra says that I've been to England. He actually says this. There's an island off the Atlantic Ocean north of France, and it's very foggy, and you can't see anything. So it's actually, he says, I've been there quite a few times, and there's a darkness which is, there's a darkness which is kind of, you know, enveloping. So thick and enveloping that it actually is v'yamesh. You can feel it. The Ramban says a similar thing as well. So those are the more pshat orientated. I want to take a step back and look at this story as we often do, in kind of the school that I'm personally very interested in exploring and teaching, kind of the modern day Tanakh orientated. Let's look for some patterns or some literary devices that the narrative of the Chumash seems to be developing. And as a precursor, I just want to say a word. There are those who say that, obviously the book of Exodus is one narrative, and there's a Yetziat Mitzrayim narrative. There are those who place emphasis, nonetheless, on the way that the parshiyot are broken up in the Torah. We know that not every Jewish community historically had the same division of parshiyot HaShavua as we do. But nonetheless, the it seems to be that the division of Parshiyot is something which is very ancient, very authentic, which leads to a meaningful discussion about the difference between the plagues in last week's Parsha and this week's Parsha. It's kind of unequally broken up. There are seven plagues in last week's Parsha, three in this week. And we'll see the Abarbanel ask that question, but some individuals try and make a pattern that kind of explains that, or an explanation for that. So look at the bottom of page 2. And this is a piece by one of my own Rebbeim, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, the current Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's son, the current Rosh Yeshiva of Har Etzion. And Rav Moshe says as follows. He makes the following observation, bottom of page 2. In Parshat Bo, this is obviously an extract, all of this changes. From the very beginning of the Parsha, we encounter harsh plagues that are meant to destroy the Egyptian economy. You could argue that the seven plagues of last week, as we said, and we made this observation about kind of, almost the laconic nature of Parshas Va'era, that these plagues are happening, but God knows they're not going to do anything. Pharaoh, it's almost like, treading water, going through the plagues, but nobody thinks that the plague of hail is suddenly going to, bring Yetziat Mitzrayim. Everything changes when you get to Parshat Bo. The plagues and their intensity step up a huge level. The locusts do not merely vex Egypt, rather they destroy the Egyptian food stocks. And it's very clear, the Torah gives tremendous amount of attention, really a lot of verses describing the plague of locusts. In their wake, there is no food left from vegetable sources. As opposed to what happened with the plague of blood, the grain does not become repulsive, rather it disappears. As opposed to what happens with the plague of hail, there is no surviving remnant, but rather the entire crop is destroyed. In other words, the plague of locusts, Arbi, which is the beginning of Parshat Bo, brings a level of destruction to Egypt that is in parallel. It's like the gloves have come off. It's not merely an inconvenience or a disaster, but it is existential. Suddenly, all vegetation in Egypt, all possibility of feeding yourself has been destroyed. It is not by chance that Pharaoh describes the plague of locusts as et hamavet hazeh. He says to Moshe, go and daven to Hashem, v'hisiru alai et hamavet hazeh. Get this death. He doesn't describe any other plague, at least until now, in those terms. The plague of darkness brings life to an absolute standstill. And it's like temporary death. As for the killing of the firstborns and the destruction that it wreaks, nothing needs to be added. In other words, if you were to talk about the theme that links the three plagues of our Parsha, locust, darkness, and the death of the firstborn, you're actually describing a horror or if the first seven plagues are war, this is nuclear war. The first seven plagues are, like a bombardment. This is, calamity on a different scale. As the killing of the firstborn, the destruction of the reason, nothing to be added. To summarize, we're talking about the threat of total destruction of the country, a plague that involves death. The reason for this is simple. In Vayera, it was necessary to bring Pharaoh to internal recognition. Therefore, it was impossible to exert excessive force that would have broken him immediately. In Bo, God wishes to cause Pharaoh to send Israel out, and for that purpose, great force is used to subdue Pharaoh and break him immediately. Now, I just want to say that as kind of a hagdama, a kind of introduction to develop this idea further, that these three plagues are of a pattern that is not simply continuity of last week's Parsha, the first seven plagues. What else links the last three plagues?
What was number 8?
Yeah. Locust.
Okay.
What else links the last three plagues? You're going to answer the question or you're going to ask a different question?
No, I'm answering
yes.
The one you just said. Okay. What links it is that they all lead to death directly. Like, for instance, if you don't know where you're going, you could walk into a stream and...
Okay. I mean, you could have been... Okay. Werner's making a good point. They're all dangerous. There's something more literal. More literal. Yes, Judy.
Yeah,
it seems that way.
Descending on earth.
Well, look at page. Oh, God descending. Look at the top of page 3. Oh. This is the words of Rabbi Yitzchak Abarbanel. famous, famous commentator, overseer of an extraordinary life story of his own right. Barbanel writes lengthy Torah commentary, and therefore is somewhat less accessible, less familiar, is not pithy kind of comment. But here, that's why I was looking over to see what where she was reading from. But look, the point about coming from the sky is the less significant part of it. Look what Barbanel says. This brilliant, brilliant insight. And the second reason, he's giving a reason why the three plagues of the Parsha Bo are units. The second reason is the plague of locusts, the plague of darkness, and the plague of the killing of the firstborn all come from the air. I don't really know what that means. And all darkness, the earth. The plague of locusts, it states. And the locusts went up over the land of Egypt and rested in all the borders, rested in all the borders of Egypt. Very grievous were they. Before they were so much, before them there was no such locusts as they. Now that they've been such, they covered the face of the whole earth so that the land was darkened. The plague of locusts meant that from horizon to horizon, the entire sky was covered in what is effectively a thick cloud. You couldn't see the sun, couldn't see the sky. If you'd been above the locust, you wouldn't be able to see the ground. The plague of locusts came and obliterated all light, plunged, and the Torah alludes to it, uses the word darkness to describe the plague of locusts. There's a plunging of Egypt into darkness by this destructive force. What does darkness have to do with the plague of darkness? The plague of darkness, it states, there was darkness over all the land of Egypt. The plague of the firstborn, it states, it was in the middle of the night. Notice that not only is death metaphorically a dark thing, but of all the plagues happen in the daytime. And as we saw last week, some of the plagues, Davka, happen in the morning. Pharaoh was to Moses was told, go and greet Pharaoh as he stands in the as he stands at the river, go and greet him in the morning. The plague of the death of the firstborn happens b'chatzi halayla, in the middle of night. Am I going to say I'm wrong? Am I wrong?
No, no, no.
Oh, okay,
no,
good. No, it's fine.
The darkness is the one plague that is that could be internal, that could be symbol of something that is inside.
I have to point out that Emmanuel is an artist. Are you also an artist? Yeah. Also light and also light, also creative and. we're going to come back to that idea. That's the next the kind of the end piece of this. Whether the darkness is a literal darkness, it is a literal darkness, but the effects of the darkness are they merely physical?
If it's literal, the Jews should have did the Jews see the locusts, for example?
Yeah, for sure.
But they didn't see the darkness.
Right.
So it's against the law.
Well, so hold off on that point for 1 second, because there's a theme that's developing here. Because I want to take the Barbanel, and this is really with the inside building of what Rav Moshe Lichtenstein says and elsewhere, what Rav Meidan writes, where a number of current huge, you know, geniuses in a living, you know, experts in the field of, you know, new Torah study, a new Pshutoshel Mikra. I'm going to make some very important observations here. So the plague of the death of the firstborn also represents a darkness, not just a metaphorical darkness, because of death and the pain and the tragedy of that death, but the fact that it happens in night. Night becomes, you know, a night of mourning. It was in the middle of the night. He placed him in darkness. And Barbanel says, like the eternally dead, paraphrasing Eicha 3:6, for this reason, the Torah grouped the last three parsha together in a separate parsha. Yeah. Let me ask you the question. So let me ask you the following question. Sorry to speak fast. What happens after the plague of darkness?
Death?
Meaning?
Meaning, didn't people die because of the 10th plague?
Right. So Bernard is saying after the 9th plague came the 10th plague. Got to get up earlier in the morning to be Bernard. After the 9th plague came the 10th plague. But as it happens, for the first time, there is a lengthy interruption in the narrative between plague 9 and plague 10. And we need to examine it, and we need to understand very well. Now, let's bear in mind an earlier point that Emmanuel that mentioned, and we'll see where Rabbi Khan flags this idea as well, that Egypt is not just a country that God is plunging into darkness with the locusts and the Makar Choshech, the plague of darkness, and soon the night, that unbearable night, where we celebrate as Seder night, and the Egyptians would have commemorated as Nakba, as this awful destruction of all of their firstborn. And it's important to mention the two sides of that. What we, for us, is this huge Yom Tov. For them, it's a night of wailing and bitterness and destruction. Egypt, as well as being a country plunged into darkness, also, and this is the other theory about the 10 plagues, is that they're there for theological purpose. And God is dealing with the gods of Egypt. The Nile River, the first plague, is turned to blood. The last plague, or plagues, the plague of darkness, Egypt worships the sun, Ra, the sun god. So the sun goes out, neither for night, for day, for 3 days, and for another 3 days. The sun is extinguished. The god of Egypt, the sun god, is vanquished. But let's see what happens next. Turn to page 348. Turn to page 348. Chapter 12. After the plague of darkness, there's an exchange between God and Moses, Moses and Pharaoh. I'm not going to let you go. I'll never let you go. You'll never see me again. This is the end of the road. And then we find the following verses. Chapter 12. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe ve'al Aaron be'eretz Mitzrayim le'mor. And Moses, God spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt. And what's happening, and what chapter 12 of the book of Exodus deals with, is the Jewish people are told, you are leaving Egypt. Moses and Aaron, go tell the people, Yetziat Mitzrayim has arrived. In 10 days' time, everybody's going to buy a sheep, and they're going to take it and tie it to the doorpost, tie it to the bedpost, and 4 days later they're going to shecht it, they're going to slaughter it, they're going to daub the blood, they're going to eat matzah, they're going to eat the lamb, and the next morning they're going to leave Egypt. And nobody's allowed to leave their home all night long. There was no such verses after the plague of blood, or the plague of wild animals, or the plague of locusts, or the plague of boils, because the time of Yetziat Mitzrayim had never arrived. In between the plague of darkness and the last plague, the time for Yetziat Mitzrayim arrives. And God begins telling the people how to act. What is famous about this chapter 12? The next verse. HaChodesh hazeh lachem Rosh Chodeshim. This month will be to you the Rosh Chodesh, will be the first of the months of the year. What is the significance of that verse? It's the first mitzvah of the Torah. The first mitzvah, we talk about Moshe Rabbeinu as the lawgiver to the Jewish people, Torah Moshe, Moses the greatest prophet. All 613 commandments are not, 630 commandments are not all given on Har Sinai. Many of them are given after Har Sinai. Some of them were given before. Excuse me, I need some more whiskey. Some of them are given before. And this is the first one. The first mitzvah of the Torah. In other words, a mitzvah directed to the Jewish people, not to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, but to the Jewish people through the prophecy of Moshe, is this mitzvah. Some level, you can't count time unless you have a calendar. So God is explaining to Moshe, look, this is what's going to happen. On the 14th of Nisan, you're leaving Egypt. 14th of Nisan is a meaningless statement because you don't have a calendar. So let me explain to you. Count 14 days from the new moon. It'll be but it's more than that. The first mitzvah setting up of a calendar system. What is the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh? How does it work? Now, those of you who follow the Lincoln Square WhatsApp Mishnah during Elul will no doubt remember this. But how do you do Rosh Chodesh? How does the mitzvah work? Yes. The witnesses have to see the new moon. When does the new moon begin?
Is that the Molad?
When does it begin? Begins when, out of the dark sky, the first appearance of the moon emerges.
Wait, the moon?
There is now the mitzvah Rosh Chodesh is not is not the full moon, it's the new moon. So important is it that Rosh Chodesh be declared at the beginning of the excuse me, at the beginning of the month, as early in the month as possible, that we saw in Mishnah Rosh Hashanah the two witnesses who happen to be out, let's say it's a cloudy night, a rainy night, they happen to be out, they glance up at the sky, and to their amazement they see a sliver of new moon. They have a mitzvah to get on their horses or their wagons, whatever it is, and rush as fast as they can to Jerusalem. If it's Shabbat, it makes no difference. They're Machalel Shabbat. They break Shabbat in order to get to Jerusalem as fast as possible. Why? Because the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh is to declare the new moon the earliest opportunity. The first moment that the light, the illumination of the moon emerges from the dark night, that is the beginning of the Jewish calendar. And according to Shemot Yudbet, it is emergence of the Jewish people. Egypt, now listen what's happening here. Egypt has been plunged into darkness. In that darkness, God takes Moshe aside and he says, look, you see up there? For Egypt, it's dark. Their sun has set. They're plunged into darkness. The Jewish people emerge from Egypt from that darkness. The first sight of the first crescent of the moon signifies the birth of the Jewish people. It's alternative light. A little bit like Emmanuel said before about kind of alternative realities. You have sunlight, you have moonlight. The Jewish people, even though the moon is smaller, the moon is more tenuous, because unlike the sun, which is always big and always too bright to look at, the moon waxes and wanes and sometimes disappears. The Torah assigns Judaism to moon-like status. But let's go further. This idea of light emerging from darkness, or the Jewish independence emerges from the darkness in which Egypt is to plunge, is not just symbolized by the very first mitzvah. It's actually part of the narrative. Not only have we seen L'chol Yisrael haya or b'moshvotam, the Jewish people had light in their dwelling place. It's kind of a symbol for what's happening. While if Egypt has been plunged into this darkness, the Jewish people are emerging into the light of redemption, the light of salvation, etc. But it goes further. When did we leave Egypt?
No light.
So it's fascinating. Turn over a few pages. Just see this before we go into the last thing on the sheets.
Can I ask a question about
that? One second. Sorry, okay. We're just staying the course here.
Okay.
So, turn to page 356. Okay. Shemot Yudbet, chapter 29. Verse 29. Yudbet Kaftet. Page 356. Look what happened. Vayhi b'chatzi halayla. It was in the middle of the night. Vahashem Ika called Bechor Betraim, Bechor Paro, Yosheva Kisar, Bechor Hashvi, Asher Bebein Abor, Bechor Behema. All the Egyptian firstborn are died, are destroyed in this night. Vyakom Pyro Laila. Pharaoh gets up at night. Hu Vechol Avada, Vechol Mitzraim, Vetitzaka, Gedola Bemitzraim, Kinbait Asher Ein Shamet. Egypt is wailing. The middle of the night, Pharaoh gets up, goes calling for Moses. Every house is awake with the sound of mourning. And he called. Look how often the word Laila here in three successive verses. This is no coincidence. In three successive verses, we get that it's night. In three successive verses, the word Laila is repeated. Laila. Get out of here. In the middle of the night, Egypt expels the Jewish people. Over the page, get away, get out of here. Verse 33. And the people were also determined to push the Jewish people, to send the Jewish people from the land, because they said we're all dead. And the people got up with their kneading troughs, with the dough, and they left. When did the Jewish people leave Egypt? According to what seems to be said here, what time of day did they leave? In the middle of the night. But in fact, that can't be. Other verses make it clear that they left in the day. God had already warned the Jewish people, You're not to leave your home until morning. There, the Jewish people experience this night as a night inside. While it's night and morning on the outside, the Jewish people are at home, in their homes, lit, eating the Korban Pesach, ready to depart. Egypt tried to push the Jewish people away in the middle of the night. The Jewish people insisted on leaving in the morning, like free people, like an independent nation. The Jewish people did not sneak away in the cover of darkness, and they weren't booted out like an errand servant under cover of darkness. They left majestic, independent, glorious, victorious in daylight. So the theme of these three plagues, these last three plagues of Egypt experiencing darkness and the whole matter coming to head in the middle of the night, and the Jewish people symbolized by the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh, which represents emerging light, and the light that the Jewish people had in their homes, and the fact that the Egyptians tried to make the Jews leave under cover of darkness, and the Jews said, no, we're people of the light, we're not people of dark, we're going in daylight. This shows the transformation, the switch. This is a point in which Egypt is finally brought to its knees and punished for what it's done, and the Jewish people emerge, they inherit, they take over from the Egypt that has been plunged into darkness, and the Jewish people emerge not with the light of the sun, but the light of Hashem, the light of Torah, the light of God's salvation is what brings the Jewish people out of Egypt. And this literary theme that is going on here in the first half of Parshat Bo, where you see both in the mitzvot and the narrative, the way that darkness and light become themes that represent the end of the old order, the punishment of Egypt, the death of Egyptians, and the emergence of the Jewish people as a free nation, is this kind of yin-yang, this, you know, the darkness becomes light, the Egyptians are vanquished and the Jews are victorious. And that to me, we're not going to say anything more about this now, that to me is a very, very, very compelling understanding of the role of the plague of darkness, representing how this great civilization is destroyed. One last word. We started a little late and we still got a few minutes on the clock. Turn to page 4. Because I want to go back to the darkness, the back page, the last page of these sheets, and say one more word. And we can link this up to everything we've said until now, but it really stands by itself, and it is a fascinating, fascinating point. I asked the question before, and we said the question, what's bothering Rashi? Why does Rashi have to explain that the plague of darkness is is not a real plague, and it's only there to get the Jewish people to come out of Egypt, to be able to, you know, get them free access to the Egyptians' homes, etc. Because apparently Rashi feels that, you know, plague of darkness is not such a big deal. Somebody push back against that idea. Who thinks the plague of darkness is indeed a big deal? Thank you, Bernard. Shalom, why?
It's all-encompassing, you know. And so it seems more powerful than the other plague because, you know, again, nobody can see anything. It isolates people.
So, if you think about it, and I'm sure psychologically, you know, if you think about it, darkness is scary. And darkness is, you know, being deprived of darkness for a period of day after day after day after day must eventually become terrifying. It's a form of torture. If you were to do this, probably illegal under the Geneva Accords, whatever, it's a very cruel thing to do. So to say that darkness can't hurt you is to undermine the kind of the psychological aspects of the prayer, of the plague. Yes.
What I thought of is it's more than that, in the sense that I see it almost as a personal darkness that's enshrouding each individual. Just because on the other hand, the Jews don't have that, whereas they do. And in a sense, it makes them feel internally as well as externally, immediately around them, just how not bad they are, but just what they've done or whatever has brought this to them.
So by the way, just before we go to page 4, I just want to say something here. Are you, and I agree with you, and I'm going to expand on this point. Is anybody familiar with a commentary on, or like a Hasidic, like Divrei Torah on the Parsha? It's a 5-volume white set. It used to be a very popular bar mitzvah present. Particularly, it was like the cheapest set as far as you could buy. And I said, "Well, I used to." Maybe that's not even. There's a saver called Mayanasho Torah. It's a 5-volume set, and it's like lots of little Hasidic Divrei Torah in each parsha. It's published in English also.
Oh, it's all the parsha.
But it's a. So in the parsha, I came across on a number of Divrei Torah on Safari, a website that has other people's shiurim and source sheets loaded up to it. A number of people were quoting, but only in English. A sefer called the Evana Ezel, which made the idea that law ra'u'i, that the word, because the plague of darkness, it says nobody could see their fellow man. So somebody wanted suggested that the greatest plague, the greatest affliction is when you're blind to other people's suffering. Ooh. And that's the ultimate plague. When you are so indifferent, you're so selfish, you can't see, you don't even notice what other people are going through. So I was actually a little dismissive. I saw this idea. Nobody was quoting it in Hebrew. It sounds like a very modern, very kind of, you know, psycho babble kind of. I mean, it's a nice idea, but I'm not sure that kind of chat. And also, the Sefer has been quoted on Evana Ezel is Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer, who was, you know, a huge yeshiva, the Lomza Rosh Yeshiva. And the sefer that he wrote was a commentary on the Rambam. Didn't sound very likely. So I asked around about this, and somebody told me that in fact it's in the sefer Mayanei Shel Torah. Look at the bottom of page 3. I'll just show you this very quickly. This is a cool aside. Bottom of page 3. So here, the name of Avni Ezel. This is a scan from sefer Mayanei Shel Torah by Rabbi. Don't remember his first name. Rabbi Ziskind. Who wrote this, you know, these Hasidic Devar Torahs and each Parsha. Evshir Sezeh Gam Kavanata Sho Chachameinu Sho Amru B'Midrash. Maybe this is what the sages meant. Ki Oviv Shalachosha Chaya Kedinar Zahav. The Midrash says that the darkness was as thick as a gold coin. Ki Adrisha Achar Dine HaZahav Magbira B'Bnei Adam Et HaAnuchiyot. That if you're so focused on chasing money, you lose all sense of self. You're no longer able to care about or to pay any attention to other people. Just 1 second, Emmanuel. So I thought, okay, so when I saw this, I was stunned. Because, you know, there's the Devar Torah. It actually exists in Hebrew. So I started asking around, who is Avni Ezel? What is the sefer Avni Ezel? Google Sefer Avni Ezel, look it up in Hebrew books or the other deposits of depositories of Torah works. Mm-hmm. There's no such sefer. So the author of Mayanei Shel Torah, which is this kind of this anthology of Hasidic writing, when he wanted to put his own Devar Torah in, he didn't say, "Here, this is one of mine. See if you like it." He quotes this mythical sefer that doesn't exist. And then I also found out that over the summer, in the end of the summer last year, I gave a series of Elul lectures. We frequently quoted Shai Agnon's book of the days of Yamim Noraim, which is an anthology. It's kind of a curated collection of Divrei Torah and Torah, traditional Torah teachings on the High Holy Days. Apparently, Agnon did the same thing as well. He invented a book that he quotes from. Now, it's not really plagiarism because he's not pretending, you know, the book is an anthology, but it's fascinating that the author kind of invented a book to quote from rather than saying, this is my, like he pretended there was a book out there called Avni Ezel. It was absolutely fascinating. Anyway, I mean, no more questions. But we're going. So now we're going to go back to page 4 and show you what a different rabbi, Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, the Ketav Kabbalah, 19th century Torah commentator, has to say about this. It'll take just 3 or 4 minutes to go through, and then we'll be done. The late 19th century was a tremendously fertile time for Torah scholarship, because even though in Eastern Europe and Russia and Lithuania, Torah observance was under incredible attack from the Haskalah and from all sorts of modernizing forces, paradoxically, or maybe predictably, the true, you know, the people who are able to rise to the occasion, some of the greatest commentaries of the Torah ever to be written, the Malbim, the Netziv, this Sefer Ketav Kabbalah, emerge from those days when the, true Torah students understood that we have to really dig deep to undercover and to let the Torah text speak for itself. Let's really drill down in the Torah and see what's actually being told. And look what happens here. So he says, We'll begin with the first part. This is an extract from a much longer piece. Rabim Yitma'u, top of page 4. Many people wonder. Hello, Amy Derech Achoshech La'asoret Hadam B'Masarat Shelo Yuchal Lekum B'Mkom Moshavo. Let's assume the Torah is not speaking in allegories, but it's literal. So it says that the darkness is so thick that you couldn't move. One second. That can't actually be the case. What kind of darkness is so thick that you can't move?
I made it.
Even the blind can move around in dark. So maybe you want to say, no, there was very dark, choking gas or steam. A miasma, you said before, that made the air so dark. So it was so physically dense that you couldn't stand up. Yeah. So how could he breathe? Hello, Karega Yamuta, Mafisat Ruach and Nishama. If the darkness is so thick to stop you moving, then how could you possibly breathe? He says, Aval ba Kabbalah hadavar mefurash. However, we can find our answer where? Not Kabbalah. When he says Kabbalah, he doesn't mean, like Rabbi Rosenthal's brother last week meant Kabbalah. Kabbalah means in Tanakh, in the Bible. But Kabbalah hadavar mefurash. And now I'm going to show you something which, if you remember, which is entirely up to you, if you remember, will completely enlighten your Pesach Seder. Because he's going to make the most boring bit of Seder night go away. Ki ha-meshorer amar, the author of the psalm says, Yishlach bam charon apo evra v'zam v'tzara mishlachat malachei ra'im. God sent against them anger, wrath, fury, and a band of destroying angels. Where do we quote that in Seder night? I forgot you were here. You're sitting behind me. Where do we quote that in Seder night? The bit about, don't say there were only 10 plagues.
Oh.
Where do I know that there were 50 plagues and 100 plagues and 250 plagues? That's a part where the narrative suddenly starts, like, you know, just kind of going off on a different direction. So, our author, Ketav Bekabla, quotes that very pasuk and says as follows. Inyan mishalacha malachei re'im. What does this mean, that there were bands of evil angels? Shamar mishorer, that the King David is quoting about, this idea is quoted in Sefer Chochmat Shlomo. We're going to get into that is right now. He says as follows. The plague of darkness was a manifestation of psychological terror. That what happened was that the people were confused and trembled. Mitmunot zarot. What does that mean? From weird images. Where did they see weird images? It was dark.
LSD.
No, they appeared in their imagination.
Yeah.
And actually, if you talk to people, to read accounts of people who plunge into darkness, it is psychologically torture.
Right.
They imagine all sorts of terrible things. Why do kids think there's monsters under the bed? Because people are afraid of the dark. They heard strange noises and they saw weird things to terrify them. So what he's saying is that is what the verse means when it talks about a band of destructive angels. This imagination, the terror that the Egyptians felt over the plague. Heina nechradu mahazeniot zarot sharua vehemarot mishunot shir lamola lahavitam. The real point of the plague of darkness was that people were absolutely terrified. They had night terrors. They imagined shapes, dragons, snakes coming at them in the middle of the darkness. Umizayatsu libam e rov pacha. They lost their hearts out of the terror. Apam kocha efes kocham at shalo yuchla litnom im komam. So, pshat. Why couldn't the Egyptians stand up in the plague of darkness? Because, according to this interpretation number one, this is 1A, we're going to get 1B in a second. Why couldn't they stand?
They were scared.
They were terrified. They were crouching under the dew. And they wouldn't dare move because they imagined that every step they would take, every time they put their hand out, some awful thing would come rushing out of the darkness. So this describes a terror. And some commentators actually say, going back to the Mida Kenegad Mida, the retribution, why did the Egyptians deserve this terror? this absolute 6 days of Gehenna, of hell, because they've done the same to Jewish people. They made their lives terrifying. And now they're inflicted with a terror unlike any other, because the plague of boils, it is what it is. You see it, you have it, you know what it is. The plague of darkness is what's worse, the terror that you don't see, much more than the terror you do see. Then, that's a quote from Chacham Shlomo. Then our rabbi, Rav Yaakov Mecklenburg, who's already living in a time when psychology is a little bit more known, he comes along and makes a brilliant insight. Vitachen, she'ein muvan milav lo kamu. He says, I'm going to go a stage further. The Torah says, lo kamu ish mitachtav. No man arose from underneath. What does the word rise mean? Kam, what does it mean? To stand up. We think it means to stand up in a physical sense. But he proves that in Tanakh, it often doesn't mean a physical rising, rather a...
psychological?
Yeah, an internal courage. Miniyat yecholat amidat haraglayim. Avau kamosher aloshen nefila mimichot v'shevel adura. Just like we describe people who are depressed or afraid in terms of being brought low, shvelat haruach nemichot, brought low, mipnei hadaga b'chayreda, that worry and terror, depressed people. Kinyin ayapul levadam alav, like we say, let your heart not fall within you. Ken loshan kum. Similarly, the word kum exactly can refer to internal qualities. It's not the physical rising, it is courage. Hu imot halev b'lipachad ve'ema, the ability to be strong without fear. As we find in the verse, I will bring you out upright. Upright here does not necessarily mean physical stature, stand up straight. It means be courageous. Let a person take courage and stand up straight, stature. V'inyan v'lo kamu ish mitachtav, and that's what our pasuk in the plague of darkness means. V'lo kamu ish mitachtav, nobody was able to stand up. Doesn't mean because they were afraid of the apparitions and the phantoms of the darkness. Namas levavam bikirbam, their whole confidence had vanished. Nafal rucham betocham, their spirits had completely fallen within them. Misivat hatachad v'chareda v'chazinah v'lahot, because of what they'd endured and because of what they thought about the darkness, it's not a question they physically couldn't rise. It was spiritually they were left, or psychologically, emotionally better, they were left on the floor. They were left, and therefore, for the Jewish people, l'chol Yisrael haya or b'moshvotam, the Jewish people had light. It's the opposite. While Egypt is being plunged into the darkness, which also represents, in a very real sense, the depression and the destruction of their confidence, a defeated people, the Jewish people are emerging. V'l'chol Yisrael haya or b'moshvotam, as we say in next week's parsha, and the Bnei Yisrael yotzim b'yad rama, with a high hand. While the Egyptians are being brought low, lo kamu, the Jewish people are being animated to stand up on their own feet because the time of the redemption has arrived. What I love about this particular interpretation is because when we talk in Seder, and this is the point of the 50, the 10, 100, the 150, 250 plagues, is we shouldn't for a moment think that the point of the plagues was merely the physical suffering. It's a psychological suffering, the worry and the trauma and maybe the guilt and all of the psychological sufferings that the Egyptians were made to undergo were 3 times, 5 times, 10 times worse than the actual plagues in their physical manifestation. And that's exactly what that Midrash, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Kiva, is talking about. So the plague of darkness is really a description about how the Egyptians, for all that they have done and for all they deserved, were brought low, were brought to a point where their spirits were absolutely broken, and the Jewish people at the same time are emerging as the people ready to leave Egypt with an outstretched hand, leave Egypt standing up straight, ready to stand at Har Sinai and to merge into world history as a free and upstanding people. So I know we went a little bit over time. I apologize for that. Bernard, mazel tov to you. Emmanuel, and what's your name again? What's your name? Your mother's neshama should have an aliyah, and only good things, Mr. Hashem.
I remember still.
Don't go away.
The blankets fall up to here. Because,
yeah, what?
Because of fear of what was underneath. I'm serious.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, one second. Does Aman, did you daven yet? You didn't? Oh, okay, fine. One second, do we have a minion on the left? Because Ian didn't daven. We have, yeah.
Do we?
Yeah, let's make it. Yeah, we have a minion of.
Oh, by the way, first thing. Three copies from you from last week.
Yeah, we need you.
I'll grab another three copies for you.